This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along this morning. And a good Wednesday to you. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up this hour. We'll also talk a little Xavier basketball with their color commentator. We have been talking about the World Baseball Classic. By the way, Byron Larkin is a former Xavier player, current radio commentator. He's set for 45 past the hour. We'll talk about the Musketeers as we continue to look at some of the teams that are making the Sweet 16. Talking about the World Baseball Classic last night, Japan beating the United States. They win the thing, and they do so. And the ending of it was as storybook as you can get in sports, with Shohei Ohtani striking out his teammate Mike Trout. Best hitter, best pitcher, the combination. Again, two guys familiar with each other. Game on the line kind of feeling. It was excellent. It was absolutely excellent. The stage that sports presents itself is remarkable. I've said for many years, I think that there the emotional attachment that we have to a sporting event, and if you listen to earlier in hour one when we played the Japanese call of that strikeout, the just euphoria that those announcers felt, the country of Japan, the numbers for the World Baseball Classic worldwide numbers are skewed because some of the countries that participated had almost their entire population watching these games. I mean, it really was remarkable to see the numbers from Japan on the games that the Japanese team was playing and how much their country was just 100% behind this. Now, in this country, I'm curious to see what those numbers are. It's kind of a dead time in the sports calendar because the Sweet 16 doesn't start till Thursday. There's really nothing going on. The first couple of games, there were a couple of women's games on Monday, but overall, there's just this sort of, you know, we're looking for something to get on a Tuesday night, or and World Baseball Classic fit the calendar. But the electricity of the moment, and I've said for many years, it's really hard to define. It's hard to define why sports matters to us as a culture, why we get really emotional with an outcome that is an unscripted outcome, right? The highs and lows of sports can really change your emotion, and it's not something that you're vested in unless you're gambling, right? It's all an emotional ride. Yeah, if you've got a mortgage payment on the game, then you can say, well, it's not the game, it's the emotion of the gambling. It's the emotion of having the money on the line. I'm talking about pure my team won and I'm elated, or my team lost and I'm deflated. We're going to see that in this tournament. I mean, remember the picture of the Utah State cheerleader crying game against Missouri in the NCAA tournament. She's now become kind of a meme. Crying cheerleaders there's a whole bunch of them. You can go look crying cheerleader meme and find a zillion of them. She's just added to the library of memes. But there's an emotional attachment to this. She's crying because, one, and she said it afterwards, she's crying because, it's her team. Her boyfriend plays on the team. They're losing. There's all this excitement about being a part of this, and then it's over. Second thing was, she was a senior, and she's like, I'm out. I'm done. This is the last basketball game I'm going to cheer. I've done this all my entire college existence, and I'm done. And there's an emotion to it. But as fans, there is just something that draws us to these kind of moments. As I was saying last night, I'm on the treadmill. I got my headphones on. I've got it plugged into the frequency so I can hear the game. I'm listening to the game. I'm watching this. And a bunch of guys on their ellipticals were watching this as well. And we weren't all gathered like you see in those World Cup games where the United States has got, there's fans gathered in parks. But there was something about this that was attractive. Now, I don't know if the World Baseball Classic ever gets to the level where we're making it an appointment, right? Where we are gathering in parks to watch this and bars to watch this, and it's really, really a big deal. The games, I think it takes a couple of years to kind of get there. And what also takes, and I think what's brewing is, I think what attracts us with the World Cup for the United States is that we're kind of this underdog country, right? But yeah, even if we were on the level of the better teams in the world, I think we would still be doing it. But now we've got a foe in the Dominican Republic and Japan. These are two outstanding countries when it comes to baseball. And I think that this event, I think they need to do a better job of hyping it up, leaning to it. I barely knew it was going to start. I think there wasn't a lot of winter buzz for this, and there should have been a lot of winter buzz for this. So, in essence, I hope that this is something that in every 3 years when it's played, all right, there, Rob Manfred already said 2026, we're away we go. Mike Trout has already said he wants to be a part of it in 2026. So I hope more players are part of it. But as it grows, you might start seeing that it becomes an appointment. You might start seeing hype videos for this way ahead of time. I can't speak for the promotions department at Fox, but I didn't see a lot of lead up to this until maybe like a week before it started. Like they should have been pumping this like ESPN pumps the Masters. I mean, ESPN has the Masters. Do you know? How do you know that? Because they tell you it all year long, right? They're always telling you Augusta, springtime, coming in April, the Masters. They tell you it all the time. Maybe they should pump this World Baseball Classic up a little bit. Maybe so. Philip on Twitter, Kentucky fans cringe every time Leitner's name gets mentioned. That still goes on 31 years later. It's 31 years later, that guy.
If we're ever driving through Kentucky, do we just go, you're trying to order a burger. It's like, yeah, I'll have the cheese Leitner burger.
Yeah,
and,
right.
Will they start throwing food at you?
What an amazing legacy that guy has for one particular
fan
base.
Can he go to Kentucky?
He went to Rupp for a fundraiser just to make fun of himself. He had the guy he stepped on step on him at a fundraiser once, and it was kind of funny.
All right,
he's really trying to become a likable person, Leitner, and I think it's there's a little bit of work. It's kind of working a little bit. I think it's because he had a long NBA career, but it wasn't stellar by any means. It was 13 years, but it was kind of like, he made one All-Star team, but it wasn't
what he had.
He was on so many teams. It's one of those, it's a journeyman story, not a star story. He would just sign deals and play, and then he would go on to someone else and he'd play. So if you want to say it's a successful NBA career under the standpoint of, well, he played 13 seasons. But he wasn't a star. He wasn't like the NBA finals were going to happen and Leitner was a critical player on a team that was vying for a championship. He never had that. So it depends on how you view success. I just view it as, all right, he had 13 years. Yeah, he had 13 years, but it's a good way to make a living. It's a good way to get rich, but it wasn't elevated. But nevertheless, he's turned the college career that he had that was very successful into that's what he does. Like he speaks at events and you pay him to speak at events. That's how he makes some money and appears in these little commercials every now and then, cameo appearances. And he kind of has a little fun with himself. But I mean, I remember that game because my brother was going to school at the time at Kentucky. And I remember Kentucky was a program that just was coming out of probation and was starting to build something with Rick Pitino. And this was for the Final Four. This was to go to the Final Four. So Pitino had, really resurrected this program. It was on the cusp of doing something awesome. And Duke destroyed it, absolutely destroyed it. And one pass, one decision not to guard the inbound. I did an interview with Grant Hill where I asked him, I said, were you surprised you got the ball? Were you surprised nobody? He goes, I was. He goes, I knew that meant there were five guys down on defense, but I knew that if I could get a look at Leitner, I could deliver him the ball. There was nobody in front of me. Can you imagine if he just had a guy on Hill and just causing Hill to move back and forth with the 2 seconds on the clock? And maybe throws an errant pass. Maybe he throws a pass that's just slightly off enough for a Kentucky player to get a hand on it. And it's a loose basketball with the clock running once the ball is touched. I mean, there's a multitude of ways that game could have happened if they had decided to put somebody on the inbound pass. But the other thing was, what I've always loved, I say this every year, what I always loved about the shot was that Leitner knew how much time was on the clock. He knew he could dribble. He didn't panic. He had his back to the basket. And he knew he could take a step, turn, and shoot. He knew how much 2.3 seconds was. He knew how long that took. That's a real critical thing for young players, to understand what you can do given the clock. What can I do in 3 seconds? What can I do in 1 second? What can I do in 0.8 seconds, right? Maybe in 0.8 seconds, I have to catch and shoot. But if I have 1.6 seconds, maybe I can have that one dribble that allows me to get a slight window to shoot this basketball. Leitner knew that 2.3 seconds, 2.7 seconds, whatever
Something
it was.
Something like that, yeah.
Whatever it was, he knew that to him was a long time to develop. One bounce, fakes turn. Yeah. That he could do. And because I've always said, if I had gotten the ball, I would have flung it over my head the second it landed in my hands. I would have flipped it over my head and hoped it went in the basket, because I would have panicked not understanding 2 seconds. Or because I'm the guy that would have dribbled and they would have said, shoot the ball. Oh, he didn't even let it out of his hands.
You know what that shot reminds me of? Reminds me of Team USA beating Moscow or beating Russia. 1988 Olympic hockey game. And the reason why I say that is because that wasn't a final.
Right, right. It was
a regional
final.
And I think a lot of
final.
People think it is.
Yeah.
Because arguably it's the greatest shot in NCAA history, right?
Even though we've had Villanova win on a national championship three.
UConn.
We've had Jalen Suggs. I think the story of that game and the legacy of those two schools and where Duke was and where Kentucky was, I think adds to the lore a little bit more. It adds to the lore a lot more. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on your Wednesday. Glad you could be with us on SportsMap Radio. Hey, if you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. What is the good of the day midweek?
The good of the day is so good that we're giving it its own segment later.
Yes.
So, I got to go with another good. And the second good of the day is that Madden announced its first ever class of their Ring of Honor inductees.
Oh, okay.
So I think they're struggling as a franchise to grab relevance again. Because I know a lot of people are turning to these first-person shooter games or first-player games or whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know, the new games, the hottest games, like Hogwarts Legacy. Then there's another Star Wars game that's coming out that is starting to get rave reviews. And I think people are moving away from that. The gamer generation is moving away from sports games. So Madden is, I mean, essentially putting all their eggs into this basket. And I don't really know what they're going to do with their Ring of Honors, but they announced their Ring of Honor inductees. And those include, it's the first five, Barry Sanders, Deion Sanders, Randy Moss, Lawrence Taylor, and Tony Gonzalez.
Oh, okay.
But what I liked about this is, do you know what position is severely lacking?
Yeah, quarterback.
Quarterback.
Where's the quarterback? In fact, I was listening for the quarterback.
Yeah, no quarterback in the first five inductees. Now, a lot of people are pointing at, it's like, oh, they probably will put Tom Brady in, but maybe it's too soon.
Are these 100 rated? Like, are these like? Did these players get a grade of 100 or something?
Yeah,
or 99
so.
Or whatever it is they
you
do?
Know, or are they? I don't know. Maybe they were the tops at their position for year after year. I don't know. I don't know what the criteria is. I mean, I can understand the players.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
You know, but Tony Gonzalez to me seems like you could replace him with anybody. No offense, Tony Gonzalez. I mean, he was a great tight end, but I don't think he's my favorite tight end.
Yeah. So,
I'm not 100% sure what the criteria is, but it was kind of funny that, you know, we put so much emphasis on the quarterback position and everything else except Madden.
I agree with what you said. I like sports games. It's one of the reasons I bought the Xbox that I bought on a Black Friday sale was because I was wanting to play the new EA Sports golf game that's coming out. And I like the Madden game, and I wanted the college football game. Like I like the sports games, Formula One racing and NASCAR racing. Then I got into these open world games, and they're really fun. I know your kids play; they were really fun. I am completely new to this. I mean, I said this yesterday. if there's a amateur title, that's me. Like, if there was of the amateurs, I'm the amateur of the amateurs. I mean, I stink at these. I don't have the button cord. My kid has to tease me because I still have to look down to see where B is on the controller. He's like, yeah. We don't know. We know where B is. Like, if you tell us to press B, we don't look at it. And I go, I still look at it. You'd think I would have it down by now. But yeah, I wonder if the Madden franchise is still losing a little relevancy. Because I spent 2 months on this Hogwarts game. 2 months playing this thing to get through it. And I did that with Red Dead Redemption. I spent months on these things. I didn't have time for other games.
Yeah.
My little wheel pedal combination set sat in the corner of the room and didn't get used.
And I'm just wondering if, like, today's generation, if they get bored too quickly. It's like, oh, it's doing the same thing again. But, yeah. Like, for me, it's like, I sat there and I would play season after season
absolutely.
Of college football, NCAA football. I mean, that was
making your own player and things like that.
I could not get enough of it. Then doing the whole off season where you're coaching and then, you know, like you're going on visits and things like that. I couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I loved it.
Loved it. You know, and I literally would take a season that was like, you know, started in, I think the last version I have was 2014. And I would take my season like 2024, 10 seasons of it.
I think I was telling you, my daughter plays NBA 2K 23.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere of the games are like in the stadium. It's incredible. Like when Steph Curry hits a shot, of course you have, I think it's Kevin Harlan that does the play-by-play for EA Sports for the NBA game. He'll say like, Steph Curry for three. You know how, but it's not even, there's the, in the background, you hear the PA announcer.
Right.
Go, Curry. So there's not only Carlin having to record every combination of dialogue that he has to record. You've got PA announcers coming in and recording every player, every time, whatever is said over the PA announcer. You're having that guy do it too.
I've noticed that in MLB The Show where, you know, every once in a while you hear in the background, now batting number 17.
That's crazy to me. I mean, listen, I think it's just marvelous because I don't know the business, so I don't know how they do it. So to me, it's great. It's just an additional thing to add to the atmosphere. I mean, yeah. I mean, how many times have you walked into somebody playing Madden and thought they were watching a real football game? Right? Everyone's like, geez, this thing is insane.
Just a weird camera angle. That's how I know I'm not watching the
weird
camera.
Yeah, that's the weird camera angle. Oh, my goodness. So, the Madden franchises is the upper echelon of video games.
It's the standard,
It's the standard. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is, I'm wondering how much, I think they play Thursday, Alabama basketball plays Thursday,
yeah, they
right?
play Thursday, yeah.
I wonder how much of that game Nick Saban is going to watch.
Actually, I'm sorry. They play Friday.
They play Friday. So yeah. still question applies. How much of that game is Nick Saban going to watch?
Why?
Well, Nick Saban addressed one of his own player issues. It's a freshman defensive back, Tony Mitchell, who was arrested for he was pulled over for speeding. Then he was found to have drugs in his car and $7,000 cash and was promptly suspended by the, you know, head coach of Alabama football,
right,
who decided to throw a little shade on top of coworker Nate Oates.
Yeah.
So here's what Saban had to say about that.
Tony Mitchell has been suspended from the team on all team activities until we gather more information about the situation and what his legal circumstance is. And guys, everybody's got an opportunity to make choices and decisions. There's no such thing in being at the wrong place at the wrong time. You got to be responsible for who you're with, who you're around, and what you do, who you associate yourself with, and the situations that you put yourself in. So it is what it is, but there is, you know, cause and effect when you make, you know, choices and decisions that put you in bad situations.
All right, Nate Oates can't go to the emperor and complain, but should Nate Oates go to the emperor and say, what exactly did you mean by that?
I think it's pretty clear what he meant by that.
Yeah, like, what did you mean by that? Are you taking a shot at me and my program? I mean, it's going up against the emperor, so be careful because you can be thrown in the dungeon with the hungry wolves,
you'll be,
right?
Yeah,
like, you're done.
So you gotta, find you gotta a new kingdom.
You better
very
be
quickly.
Careful, right? But that is clearly a shot at the way Nate Oates handled the Brandon Miller situation. That is clearly a shot at that. And Nick Saban, look, Nick Saban tells the story of a player at Michigan State that he coached. He loves to tell that story of one of his players at Michigan State got in trouble, big-time trouble while he was on campus, but we didn't kick him off the team. We suspended him, but we didn't kick him off the team. And then later on, the guy became an NBA player, an NFL player, became an entrepreneur. His daughter's going to Princeton. He's married with like four kids. He said, look, it's if I had thrown him off the team, who knows where his story would have ended up.
Yeah.
We worked with him through this problem. We suspended him. We worked him through being a youth and making wrong decisions. And now look where he is as a, 48-year-old man, right? He's told that story. I'm surprised he wasn't going to allow Nate Oates the leverage to do the same thing, right? Which is what he's saying is we suspended him until we get all the news. Nate Oates should have suspended everybody involved with that until they got all the information.
Leads me to this point. If it was Bryce Young, would Nick Saban still say the same thing?
Yeah, it's a freshman player on his team, right?
It's a freshman defensive back. He probably has, 17 NFL-ready defensive backs on the roster right now.
Right.
This guy probably wasn't even going to start this year, but, hey, I'm going to set the example. I don't mind him suspending it, but, that line is throwing shade on top
that
of Nate
line,
Oates.
That line, that was a deliberate line at the way Nate Oates handled Brandon Miller. That is exactly right. When Brandon Miller said, but here's the thing. Brandon Miller said that and then apologized for saying that. Like he said Nate Oates said that and then apologized for saying that. It was a slip of the tongue, not really a slip of the tongue, but it was just a bad choice of words. We all do that. It happens all the time where you say something,
He was hoping to say that and, favor would be on his side. Public opinion
maybe
would be
so,
on his
maybe
side
so,
a little bit.
Maybe so, but I think he just said it and then afterwards it went, did you? And he goes, oh man, I probably didn't mean it like that. It didn't come out right. All right, we're going to get the dumb, and then we're going to get the extra good of the day coming up in the next segment, because we really got to get to the extra good, because it's really extra good. All right, that's coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. We're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb, but then we got an extra good for this segment. So let's get the dumb
the dumb is the extra good. This is so fantastic that,
let's throw that all together.
A lot of times what I do with the dumb is, it's like kind of make it into an awesome.
Yeah.
Here's how it correlates to dumb. It makes so much sense.
Of course it does.
Location and for what the issue is that it's dumb that we didn't think of this first.
Okay. So let's tell everybody what the dumb extra good is.
It is that upon moving, Jimmy G is the king. He's going to go down as the greatest quarterback ever. Not for off the field stuff, I guess. Right? He said signing with the Raiders, two ranch workers.
Brothel workers.
Okay. I was using ranch in quotations. have offered him free sex for life.
Free sex for life
for
at these brothels.
For life.
All right, so two ladies at the Chicken Ranch Brothel. Why would you call it the Chicken Ranch Brothel?
I don't know.
Caitlin Bell and Alice Little. That's not their real names, but nevertheless,
that's what they go by.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm going to look them up in the phone book.
Their stage names?
They're so overwhelmed by the handsomeness of Jimmy Garoppolo. They have given him a lifetime pass to their brothel in Nevada.
Can you?
So Bell said, I almost fainted when I heard Jimmy signed with the Raiders. He deserves free sex for just joining our team. But he gets free sex for life from us just because he's such a legit babe. Are you kidding me?
I mean,
like, are you serious? Like, and then another one said, well, we're not going to be left. They're all going to do it eventually. I don't know how many of them exist in the Nevada area, but all of them are going to be offering Jimmy Garoppolo life. He's going to be like, I have football to play, ladies. I'm exhausted. I can't play here and then football. Thanks, but no thanks.
And here's the deal. They all know that he already dips his toes into those pools.
Yes, he does. Because he's not married. He dated a
porn star.
A porn star. Well, he's in San Francisco.
So,
are you kidding me?
I mean, they know that he's okay with their line of work.
Yeah, he's totally fine with that.
It rains, it pours, man.
I was just telling you, like, look, there are good-looking athletes. I've never seen an outpouring like this before. But is it because he's in Las Vegas? Is there an extra level of notoriety because of what that state offers terms of this?
I have no doubt that while in San Francisco, while in New England, any city he traveled to, that you know he slept lonely.
Right.
There isn't a doubt in my mind that he wasn't capable of finding it on his own all the time.
It's crazy.
But this is, you know, just publicly people coming out going, yeah, he has this, you know, this Monopoly card that's good for life.
Lifetime pass. Okay. I was thinking of this yesterday. Brian Bosworth, when he went to play for the Seattle Seahawks, I think it was after his rookie year, he wrote a book called The Boz. And it was basically his life at Oklahoma and being a rookie and his battles with the NCAA. One of the things that he said was because remember how he had the weird hair? He had the mohawk kind of thing, but he had a style of hair. That was his trademark.
It was like a mullet.
Yeah, right.
It was a flat top on top and then a little longer in the back.
So he said that when he got to Seattle, he had so many barbers say to him, I'll cut your hair for free. But he said in the book, he chose the one guy that said, I'll cut your hair and I charge $150. And he said, that's a guy that respects his trade. That's a guy that's not giving it away. So that's the guy I chose. I could have gotten my hair cut for free from any of these guys, but the one guy that said, but I charge you $150 to cut that hair the way you want it. He said, that guy had my respect. Let's transfer that to Jimmy Garoppolo's situation. Like, does Jimmy Garoppolo go, no, I'm not taking this for free. I'm taking the one that charges $1,000 an hour. That's a woman that respects her trade. Is there a similarity to that? That Jimmy Garoppolo's like, I don't know if I want free.
I don't know if sex and haircuts correlate.
Right?
If they go together.
Like, I don't know. But here's the deal.
Here's the deal, Tony. I don't think these girls are hurting. I think they're sitting there like,
No. The barbers weren't hurting either.
No,
he was talking about weren't hurting either. It was the principle of the what he said was like, I'm not going to take something for free that you worked hard to do to perfect. Here's the thing with Garoppolo. Is this the only thing? He was in the Super Bowl, for crying out loud. But is this the only thing Jimmy Garoppolo that people are excited about? Is that he's a good-looking quarterback? Like, is anybody in Las Vegas excited about it? That he's, like, the girls are saying, I'm so excited that he's our quarterback because he's attractive. Like, no, is anybody saying he's going to help us win a loaded AFC?
They don't say he throws a tight spiral.
Nobody. And by the way, before we mock this, there's a serious side of this that I want to get to. Because we all know that these guys, when you see them in hotels, they go to these hotels and there's just lines of women that especially in, you know, the NBA, whatever.
Cleat
there's
chasers.
Groupies everywhere. Yeah, there's groupies everywhere. But I think Jimmy Garoppolo is I think he would utilize this, because what do you always say about that service? What do people say about that service? Why do senators, why do business executives, why do famous actors, why do people utilize these services? Why do they pay for it when they don't have to pay for it? Why do they pay for it? Because you don't pay for the sex. You pay for it to go away. You pay for it to never appear again. That's what you pay it for, pay for it. And that's a serious thing here. If you tangle up with a groupie in St. Louis, 9 months later, she might be at your doorstep.
Well, but she's also coming to you for a reason.
Right, right.
She isn't there just to put a notch on her belt. I mean,
exactly.
Most of the time, they're coming after you because they know that you're rich and successful.
That's,
these women, they're already rich and successful.
When I hear people say, why would they get an escort? I think people don't really understand why they get an escort. Right? Like, they're not paying to have sex with them. They're paying for it to disappear from their lives. For that professional is never going to blab it, is never going to utilize it as blackmail, is never going to, it goes away. It's not on TMZ. It's not going to show up. It's,
nope.
It disappears.
This story shows up on TMZ.
This story's on TMZ because the girls went after TMZ and told them about it.
And we sit back and go, well, of course that's going to happen to Jimmy. It's not going to happen to anybody else.
No.
You're never going to hear about this about any other player. It only has to be. It's only going to be Jimmy. Like Burroughs. You're never going to hear that about Joe Burroughs.
No, no.
Never going to hear about Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. Maybe quarterback.
There's a perfect storm of Nevada legalized brothels, Jimmy Garoppolo, single, rich, handsome. There's a perfect storm that makes this story complete, because they're not talking about a young Joe Burrow in illegal brothels in upstate Cincinnati, or, you know what I mean? Like, he's not talking like it's like Sin City, good looking quarterback. It all comes together, right?
Yeah,
it all kind of flows together. But this is like
we read the story.
This is insane. This is
what I loved most about it is that you read the story and you didn't think twice about whether this is true or not, whether this is this or that. You know, I mean, and let's face it, there's a lot of good-looking guys out there who play in the NFL.
Yep.
You know, we know that there are. But none of them have that, I don't know, that charisma, machismo. I don't know what Jimmy G has. But
if Tom Brady came out of retirement and went to the Raiders, I think you'd see a similar story, right? Would you see a similar story?
I don't know.
A single Tom Brady?
Maybe younger.
You think these women care that he's 30?
Well,
he's not 21.
Yes, but it's not. I think that Jimmy G surpasses Tom Brady in this category alone. I think that, because this is what's followed Jimmy G. It hasn't been what he's done on a football field.
Oh, no. You're 100% right.
I mean,
selling these Subway sandwiches because he's good looking. Right. They even joke about that in the ad.
Yeah, and his mom is calling him out, or his auntie,
right,
or whatever.
His grandmother.
His grandmother.
Right.
That he's not so bright.
Right, but he's handsome. Right? This is a crazy story, man. This crazy story. Jimmy Garoppolo living the good life. Living the life. Whatever. It's Wake Up Call. Sports Map Radio. We'll talk to Xavier Musketeers next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call. Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, helping you save and helping you bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at progressive.com today. And also for a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. We've been talking some NCAA tournament teams, and we've been looking at some of them as they head to the Sweet 16. Byron Larkin joins us, former Xavier shooting guard. He's currently their radio color commentator as Xavier gets ready to play Texas on Friday. They're a 3 seed. They come out of the Big East Conference. Their head coach is Sean Miller, and Byron joins us to talk Xavier basketball. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for joining us and helping us a little understand a little bit more about the Musketeers. All right, so the Big East, it's a tough conference. How did they navigate through that conference, and what are the strengths of this year's Musketeer team?
Well, Xavier's, Xavier's, I think, greatest strength is their balance this year. They led the Big East in assists. They led the country in assists at 20 assists a game. They have all five starters. They're in double figures. When they're at their best, they're really sharing the basketball and scoring from the outside and in. I think one of their greatest strengths is their unselfishness, and wherever the open shot is, you know, they're all willing to give that pass up, give the ball open shooters. They very rarely take bad shots. I think that's their greatest strength. Sean Miller's done an unbelievable job with this team.
Sean Miller has got an interesting journey, obviously. He was a Xavier coach, and then he went to Arizona and had the Wildcats for a number of years, and then now he's back with Xavier, and in his first year getting him back to the Sweet 16. What has it meant to him back into this program? And, again, I know there were some challenges at Arizona, but, again, you're talking about a guy that leaves a program and comes back to a program. How different has that been, and how welcoming was he coming back to the Cincinnati area?
Oh, my gosh, he's been a lifesaver. I've been to the tournament for 4 years. Before that, going to like 18 out of 19 NCAA tournaments. So folks around here were not used to not going to the tournament.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of people upset. And last year, Xavier made it to the NIT game. And in that first NIT game, they had like 1,500 people come to a 1,000 people, and that sells out every game. I mean, that was a sign for the president and our Greg Christopher, our athletic director, to go out and get somebody. And Sean Miller was the best coach available at the time. He was hired for this very moment here to get Xavier back to the tournament, which he did. Xavier finished second in the Big East, which is, I think they had the second highest total number of wins. And then to get us back to the Sweet 16 is something that everybody's just thrilled with, because they wanted a big time coach, and Sean Miller came in and had instant results, and everybody is super happy with him being back.
You can change the look of your team pretty quickly with transfer portal. How different is this team looking? Who are some new? Are there a ton of new faces on this team, or is he taking what was there and turned them into a Sweet 16 team?
Yeah, it's more the latter. I mean, I think Xavier really only added one player from last year, and that was a transfer portal player, Sule Boom, who played at UTEP, and he and another freshman who comes off the bench, have played some significant minutes. But other than that, it's the same players that we had last year. And to see some of the things that Sean Miller has done with those same players play 180 degrees different, it's just amazing the job he did. And, they're a veteran team. I mean, they have all five starters are over 1,000-point scorers. Sule Boom, the leading scorer, has over 2,400 college points. And so there's a lot of experience, a lot of scoring in this team. They're an older team, and they've done it with a lot of their homegrown talent.
This is a team that scores a lot of points. This is one of the top teams in college basketball in terms of points per game. But would you describe them as an up-tempo team, or is this a very just efficient half-court team?
They're kind of in between. They're a team that likes to play, you know, they don't want to get out and they don't want to play, you know, get to shootouts with teams. They don't want to do that, but they don't want to play that Big Ten, you know, style of 5 yards in a cloud of dust,
sure.
Football analogy, you know, yeah. They don't want that. They don't want a rock fight. They just want to play up tempo. They want to play, with a up tempo, kind of in between, and they're best when they're playing relatively fast, just because they're so efficient. I think the one Achilles heel for this team is that they have no depth. Their bench, their second leading scorer on the year, Zach Fremantle, got hurt about 10 games left in the season. He was our leading rebounder and their second leading scorer. He was a 6'9 power forward, one of our best players. But Xavier's been able to just to kind of soldier on without him. But in the wake of that, you know, it's really exposed Xavier to their bench and their lack of a bench. So staying out of foul trouble is going to be really important for this team.
How is this week's analysis of Texas, and what do you anticipate on Friday?
Well, Texas is a terrific, terrific team. I mean, they've got it all. I mean, they've got super guards. They're big men. They're good. We're familiar with Bishop. Bishop used to play at Creighton, so we played against him many years and know how talented he is. And I know they lost their coach, but the assistant coach has stepped in, and I understand he's familiar with Sule Boom. He coached Sule Boom at UTEP. It was my understanding for some time. So there's going to be some familiarity with them. I know Texas destroyed Kansas, and anytime you can destroy a number one seed, that's a number one team in the country, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's so pretty good, right.
Xavier has a tremendous, tremendous challenge in front of them, you know. Yeah, I'm real interested. It's cool. In my family, my little brother played baseball at Texas. So I think we've met in the Sweet 16 a couple times, Xavier and Texas. So it's going to be real interesting for Xavier and me on a personal level as well.
What was it like to play at Xavier? It's one of those schools I like to talk to players about. It's in a city. There's a lot of other sports going on. It's still a high profile program. What was it like for you to be in a city environment where there's pro athletes and a lot of other things going on, but you're right in the middle of it?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I'm from Cincinnati, born and raised, so I always loved this place. But, you know, it's nice. I mean, UC is, Cincinnati's 3 miles away from Xavier. You know, UK is an hour and a half south. And you got Notre Dame is 4 hours north. I mean, IU is 2.5, 3 hours, you know, east. So there's a lot of big-time programs in this area, you know, not to mention, you know, the Bengals, the Reds, and all that. A lot going on in this city. And I think it's a great place to go to school. I mean, Xavier, you know, they graduate 100% of their four-year players. They've done that since early in the 1980s. And, you know, they can win championships. And, you know, they're back to relevancy on the national level. Sean Miller has restored that, and everybody at Xavier's really proud, and, you know, the city's got behind them, and it's just great. Everybody's really excited.
And by the way, was your brother's Barry Larkin? Is that what I hear?
Yeah, my oldest brother's.
You're of the Larkins, right? You're of a bunch of good athletes.
yes, that's Barry. And then, yeah, Barry played baseball in Michigan, and my little brother Steven, as I said, played at Texas. So, you know, got a lot of hook'em horns, you know, gear from Steven hooking me up. So, you know, as soon as Xavier won and as soon as they beat Pitt, and it was, you know, he's the first Texas hit. And he's like, we got you again. Cause the last time they played, Xavier beat Texas. So yeah. So that's a little joke we got with me and my little brother.
I'm a big fan of the Big East Conference from way back, but even as it reshuffled, I'm still a big fan of the Big East Conference. So good luck, Xavier, and good luck Friday night against Texas. Appreciate your time helping us with the Musketeers.
Thank you. No problem.
You got it. Byron Larkin, again, he's with the color commentator for the Xavier basketball team, also played there. And again, as they get ready for the Texas Longhorns, that is a 3-2 matchup, I believe, for that tournament for region, as we can, you know, continue to look at teams that make up the Sweet 16. All right, Hour 3 is coming up next as we continue on Sports Map Radio. Again, taking a look at the World Baseball Classic, but we'll get back to hoops and talk about some of the teams that are still kicking around. Three of these teams, 11 conferences are represented, but three of the teams come from one conference. We'll tell you about that coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.